She wondered why it was that premises that, from 9 to 5 each day, presented a scene of activity and a certain amount of animation, even in law offices people joked and discussed the latest plays, etc., should settle down to such a frightening calm when the day's work was done. And it wasn't a lifeless calm either. There was always the unexpected creak of a floorboard, the busy movement of a mouse behind the wainscoting, and the offices of Mancroft, Mancroft and Miles were so old that there were probably vast regiments of mice hidden away behind the wainscoting. The panelling, although frequently admired by clients, was dim and dusty, the fireplaces yawned like open mouths, and the evidence of a reasonably modern system of central heating was incongruous. Rose gathered up her work and carried it through into Mr. Mancroft's office. There, the atmosphere was heavy with the stale odour of law books and Mr. Mancroft's briar pipe. Rose shifted the latter gingerly, together with the pouch of tobacco that the senior partner had somewhat carelessly left behind, from the middle of the blotting pad, and set down her own neat file of papers in its place. Then she noticed that, obviously suffering from a temporary mental aberration, Mr. Mancroft had left his evening paper behind as well. She picked it up and studied it for a few seconds. The front page bore a photograph of a very beautiful young woman, and beneath it the caption ran, "Miss Caroline Ann Vasey prepares for the wedding of the year." Inset in the photograph was a slightly smaller reproduction of a recent likeness of Miss Vasey's husband-to-be, Richard Guy Denzel Wakeford, son of the shipping millionaire. The caption, in connection with his arrestingly regular features and old-school tie, was enough to arouse interest in the breast of any female, and Rose read it with a slight quickening of the pulse and a fleeting glow at the back of her eyes. "Mr. Guy Wakeford is one of the wealthiest young men in the country, owner of a string of polo ponies, several specially built racing cars, country houses, and a penthouse flat in New York. He also has a house in Bermuda, and that is where the honeymoon will be spent. Or part of the honeymoon, for the couple propose to travel extensively before returning to set up house at Willowfield Hall in Yorkshire." Rose felt as if her breath caught in her throat for an instant, and she closed her eyes. Yorkshire. Her own county. And although she had never heard of Willowfield Hall, she could see the backcloth of moorland against which it would be set, and smell the sharp tang of the sea as it was borne inland from the sturdy line of coast. She could even hear the lonely crying of the gulls as they too swept in from the sea. Yorkshire, Willowfield Hall, and Bermuda. A honeymoon in Bermuda. She glanced again at Guy Wakeford's photograph, and she thought there was a faintly brooding expression in his eyes, and his chin looked a little mutinous. Apart from that, he was the answer to every maiden's secret prayer. Handsome, virile, impeccably groomed, and of course, rich. Miss Carol Ann Vasey was described as being a member of a very old family, and her portrait had hung in the summer exhibition at the Academy. It had put the artist right in the front rank of portrait painters and brought the sitter a number of offers to appear in advertising and films and other mediums of public entertainment. The offers had been disdainfully refused, although the information about her in the newspapers did not, of course, reveal this sidelight. And that afternoon she had attended her wedding rehearsal, and large numbers of women had rushed to watch her leave the church. There was a pencilled note in Mr. Mancroft's hand at the top of the evening paper, and Rose read it with a faint feeling of surprise. "Remember Guy in his prep school days. Money's a curse." Rose couldn't seriously believe that money was a curse, but being short of it was frequently a cause of embarrassment. She had discovered that when she was left to fend for herself, and her father's old house in Yorkshire had been sold. Once everything was settled, there was not enough left to furnish the most microscopic flat for herself, and she couldn't even think about a holiday until she had saved up for it. Perhaps that was why, having survived a sweltering summer in London, she thought wistfully of open spaces and cool zephyrs from the sea. She went back into the outer office and was about to adjust the cover on her typewriter when she thought she heard a sound that could hardly be occasioned by mice. It was a step on the stairs, and it was followed by another muffled step, and then a hard, masculine cough. She walked swiftly to the door and flung it open. And the man who had just reached the top of the flight was clinging to the handrail, looking at her vaguely. There was blood streaming down from a cut above one eyebrow, and he was so pale that she uttered an exclamation. The incongruous thing about him was that he had a flower in